to another edition of the NB Update. I'm David Gordon Koch, reporting from Moncton. This program is brought to you by the NB Media Co-op in partnership with CHCO Television. At the NB Media Co-op, our stories take a social justice lens. The month of May is Membership Month, our annual funding drive. If you like what we do, please support us by donating and becoming a member of the co-op by going to our online publication at nbmediacoop.org and clicking on join the co-op /donate. Today on the show, we focus on issues affecting migrants, immigrants, temporary foreign workers, and refugees. They face a rising tide of xenophobia in recent years, especially with the cost of living crisis. In the United States, President Donald Trump has led a campaign of mass deportation with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. A migrant justice organizer from Minneapolis recently visited New Brunswick as part of events marking International Workers' Day, or May Day. He spoke about the brutal ICE raids that have made headlines internationally and how activists in the Twin Cities have responded to the crackdown.
Basically, what ICE was doing was saying, well, if you're brown, you're going down, no matter what. So we applied the same principle, but backwards. If you're brown, I'm going to share this information with you. I'm going to share your rights. You have information you need to know.
We'll have more highlights from that talk later in the show. Before that, the federal government recently introduced spending cuts affecting refugees and asylum seekers. Those people will now have to cover 30% of the costs of supplemental health care services and $4 for each prescription. The federal government says the changes are meant to ensure the program remains sustainable, but critics say the policy is inhumane and that it will ultimately backfire as vulnerable people end up in hospital.
If you have psychological trauma that was not taken care of, you will be, might be into a psychological breakdown and you would be in the emergencies.
Over the next months, we're going to see more and more of these patients falling through holes in the care system because they will not be able to afford these changes.
That report is coming up in a moment, but first, these news briefs from nbmediacoop.org. Elsa Booktook First Nation has inaugurated 6 women and 6 men to council following recent band elections. It's the first time in recorded history that Elsa Booktook has achieved gender parity among band counselors, according to one administrator. Our report features interviews with several of the women newly elected to the band council. The Minister of Post-Secondary Education says the government may hire a private collections agency or begin garnishing wages to recover unpaid student loans. But critics say the policy doesn't make sense amid the current affordability crisis. They've called for the government to implement policies such as a wealth tax instead of cracking down on student loan debtors. You can read all the details on our website, nbmediacoop.org. Finally, the federal government has handed a $90,000 fine down to a New Brunswick lobster processing company. That company, Pêcherie Le Breton, received the penalty for failing to prevent abusive conditions for temporary foreign workers. In 2024, the feds banned the company from hiring migrant workers for 2 years and fined the company more than $350,000. However, Pêcherie Le Breton challenged that move in federal court, which overturned part of the original penalty. A spokesperson for Employment and Social Development Canada confirmed to the NB Media Co-op that the latest penalty stems from a reconsideration of the earlier fine. In 2024, a lawsuit was launched in small claims court by 2 former migrant workers against Pêcherie Le Breton. A court date in March was adjourned to allow them to negotiate a settlement. And you can find more news and commentary on our online publication, nbmediacoop.org. Coming up next on the show, refugees and asylum seekers are now on the hook for healthcare products and services that used to be free. The new co-payments don't apply to basic healthcare such as doctor visits or pre-departure medical services for those in overseas refugee camps. However, people who receive coverage under the Interim Federal Health Program, or IFHP, now have to cover 30% of so-called supplemental health expenses. they will also have to pay $4 out of pocket for every prescription that needs to be filled or refilled. The changes came into effect on May 1st. To learn more about the effects of these changes, I spoke to people who work closely with refugees and asylum seekers in New Brunswick. The Multicultural Association of the Greater Moncton Area, better known as MEGMA, is a resettlement agency that has been serving people in the region for more than 40 years. MR Yunus is the manager of the settlement department. He's also a former physician.
There will be co-payment for the supplemental medical services, which include dental, optometrist, mental health, and some other like needs, like for disabled people. So this will be like the client need to pay 30% of the cost. It is wheelchairs, it is diapers for those who in need for this, nutritional supplies.
Spending on the interim federal health program roughly quadrupled over 4 years to reach $900 million by 2025, according to the Parliamentary Budget Officer. The government estimates that its new co-payment model will save $140 million in the first year. But advocates for refugees say the cuts will have dire consequences and that they will ultimately put more pressure on hospitals.
Because many of those who are covered by IFHP, when they arrive to Canada, they need medical services covered by this. It is due to issues like accumulated over years. Like most of these people, they didn't receive like regular dental cover. So when they will arrive here, they arrive with a lot of issues that need immediate care. So many of them, they will arrive even with medical issue that was not treated before, okay, or under-treated. So when they will be here, they are in need for these services. Like many of them, they faced, like they came from war zone, they faced a lot of torture and even sometimes domestic violence or these. So when they are here, most of them, they have like post-trauma, psychological distress and syndrome, and they will need the medical care, which is one of them is like the psychological or psychiatric support. And this is, it was used to cover, like be covered 100% by the IFHP, and now they have to pay 30%, which they would not be able to go through this. And this will lead, by the way, to increase the pressure on the hospitals and the emergencies. Because they, when you don't get the service through this way, okay, where you will end? You will end in the emergency. Like if you have psychological trauma that was not taken care of, you will be, might end with psychological breakdown and you will be in the emergencies. They are looking for safety, okay? So usually these people are not living in good condition in hosted countries, you know, in hosting countries. Like the Rohingya, when they are moving to Bangladesh, okay, they are living in a camp that they are not allowed to work, they are not allowed to leave even the camp. So when they come here, already they are suffering from severe mental distress. They didn't get like the even the basic medical care before they arrive here. So when they arrive here, like already there is a lot of issues that the system has to take care of it. There is many of them, they will come with like issue with the nutrition. Like there is deficiency in many like vitamins, irons, all these supplements, you know. They're having anemias. They're having like even a chronic disease that was not treated before.
Last year, the provincial capital became home to a new health clinic for refugees. It's part of the Fredericton Downtown Community Health Center. Staff at the clinic are very concerned about the cuts, says Dr. Chris Arsenault.
So we're very concerned at the clinic as to how these cuts are going to affect our patients. And I don't think we even understand the full scope of what is going to happen yet. My first concern as a prescriber is the co-payments on prescriptions, which although they are a nominal fee, they're only a few dollars. Refugees are one of the most financially vulnerable groups in the country. Virtually all refugees are coming to this country with very few, if any, belongings, almost no, if any, savings, and dependent on very thin social services incomes in order to make ends meet. So they're generally food insecure, they're generally housing insecure while I'm treating them. And so the few dollars that they'll now have to spend on my prescriptions may mean the difference between adequately feeding their children or adhering to my treatments. The broader implications in terms of coverage for allied health services, especially mental health services, which is huge in this almost universally traumatized population, we're very, very worried about. And we, because it is such a patchwork of services, we don't even know which ones yet we're necessarily going to lose and which ones we might be able to retain. Because there are a lot of organizations that do pro bono work for us and for our patients. And so some of them may still be able to get the funding they require and some of them may not. So over the next months, we're going to see more and more of these patients falling through holes in the care system because they will not be able to afford these changes.
Critics, including from the Canadian Medical Association, have suggested it will in fact, download costs onto emergency wards, onto putting more pressure onto provincial health services. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I completely agree. So the co-payment model, whether that $140 million is what they expect from the co-payments or what have you, I think what will actually happen is behavior change where people will not fill prescriptions. And so they will not receive care. And that care will be downloaded onto the few remaining fully funded services, which are physician services. They can see me for free and they can go to the hospital for free. And that's about it. So absolutely, people who, you know, if I'm controlling their blood pressure in clinic and they're not having a hypertensive crisis and going to the emergency department with a blood pressure of 200, I'm saving the system huge amounts of money with those prescriptions. Those prescriptions now probably won't be filled for some of those patients, which in theory saves the federal government $20 on that patient. In practice, gets them an emergency visit, probably an admission, several days of IV meds, and then the same prescriptions again that they won't be able to fill. So it will do harm, I think, to the system fiscally and in terms of loads on already overloaded hospital systems, and it will also do harm to patients.
The changes to the interim federal health program are part of larger cuts across government introduced in last year's federal budget. It featured $60 billion in cuts over 5 years, coupled with massive increases in military spending. We requested an interview with a senior official from Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada for this report. IRCC didn't respond to that request and instead provided a written statement. It said in part that the new co-payment model will help manage growing demand. It added that the changes will align IFHP coverage more closely with other health insurance programs that also require Canadians to pay for various health care products and services. The statement also pointed to efforts to close what it called loopholes at the border and to increase scrutiny of visa applications. And it noted the recent adoption of Bill C-12, saying that this legislation includes new measures to protect the asylum system against future claim surges and support more efficient processing of asylum claims. However, a coalition of human rights groups has called Bill C-12 an attack on refugee and migrant rights. They have warned that it will put refugees at risk of being sent back to torture or persecution, while expanding the government's power to cancel visas without due process, among other concerns. The changes come at a time when refugees, migrants, and immigrants face a xenophobic backlash. Racism in Canada has gained traction during the cost of living crisis, with some Canadians openly calling for a US-style mass deportation campaign. A migrant justice organizer from Minneapolis recently visited New Brunswick to speak about how people in his community have fought back against that deportation campaign under President Donald Trump. Izar Cabrera from the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee spoke in Moncton and Fredericton about how people have built solidarity against ICE. The events, which took place on May Day weekend, were organized by the Madhu Verma Migrant Justice Center, the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change, and the Socialist Project of Fredericton. We end today's show with highlights from the event in Moncton, which took place at the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Hall.
So, as you may have heard in the news or saw in the news, in the past winter, we faced an invasion of our streets. The federal government sent around 3,000, 4,000 federal agents to enforce the immigration laws. And when we ask to our elected leaders for help, what they told us was, what they say to us or to the people was, well, they have bigger guns, you know, there's not much we can do. So we had to step up. We said, well, maybe they have bigger guns. We have lots of will and we have each other and we care about our neighbors. So what we did, we grabbed our cell phones, we grabbed our whistles, and we just took over the streets. We basically started organizing. We basically had to put together clandestine networks, training people about their own rights, about the immigrant rights, telling them you have rights regardless of your immigration status. We started sharing this information through workshops and churches, community centers, places like this, union halls, all kind of places. Whoever was willing to open the doors for us and let us share the information, share the message, we had to do it ourselves because our leaders were like, oh, sorry, we can help you. So what you saw in the news again, it was barely the surface of what actually happened. What you didn't see was how we had to create our own resistance. People were going to the court appointments. They have legal cases. And when they were entering these appointments, we had to start teaching people on the spot, teaching them, you know what? They might take you today because what was happening, the prosecutors decided to remove the procedure for the case, so they no longer have the protection of the case. So this would open the door for the ICE agents. They don't have the protection anymore of the case, so they would open the door for the ICE agents to just take them right outside of court. So what you had to do is teach these people right on the spot. Like I said, we would go to the courthouse and tell them they might take you today or may not. You might not see your family anymore. You might want to write a number, an important number on your arm. And good luck. May God help you. This is also part of the resistance. It's not only... You might think about resistance about someone throwing a Molotov bomb, or maybe you think about someone setting something on fire, but it's also this. On top of that, not only was the court hearings, we started seeing them going into the hospitals too. They were they were trying to get people who was going for healthcare, whatever appointment they had, they started getting into the hospitals. So the workers, the nurses and doctors, they also came up together and they said, this is not okay. This is not normal. You're not supposed to, we're trying to take care of people, of the life of these people. We're trying to take care of their health. This is not normal. This shouldn't be happening. So they organized to, like, we shared the training with the doctors and nurses and the union of the workers working in hospitals, like the cleaners and everything. So we taught them, like, the things that you can do and you cannot do, like creating a human chain so you don't let the ICE agents into the hospital, or trying to, there was a case where they had to move the patient from one room to another, but they covered their face. And while the nurse was distracting the ICE agent, they took the patient into a different room through the elevator that was only for employees, and they were able to hide it from immigration. So creativity was part of the game, basically. We had to become creative if we really wanted to help people. Yeah, like I said, we also shared information. We had these red cards. We called them the red cards. Basically what ICE was doing was saying, well, if you're brown, you're going down no matter what. So we applied the same principle, but backwards. If you're brown, I'm going to share this information with you. I'm going to share your rights. You have information that you need to know. So we were sharing this information that was telling them, I do not wish to speak with you, answer your questions, or sign or hand you any documents based on my Fifth Amendment. I do not give you permission to enter my home based on my Fourth Amendment. I do not give you permission to search any of my belongings based on my Fourth Amendment. I choose to exercise my constitutional rights. We have this in multiple languages. It was English, Spanish, Hmong, Somali, Arabic. Another thing that we saw, very heartwarming for me, I'm a school bus driver. I work with kids. And during my route, I had the experience, the interaction with several parents who would tell me, because they knew what I would speak Spanish. I know them, and they would tell me, please, I'm gonna go to work now. If I don't see my kids anymore, sorry, get a little sentimental when I speak about this, because I remember their faces and they're telling me, I might not be coming back and I might not see my kids anymore. Please make sure they come back home and I love them. Tell them that I love them. In response to that, a lot of the teachers, they came up with this idea to create patrols around during the drop-offs and pickups of the students. They organized to have parents or their own teachers, their own staff, to be sitting outside of or walking outside the school in case there was ICE agents, because they also took students from schools or parents that were picking up, that were dropping off kids at a school. So one thing that I want you, if there's one thing that you can remember from this talk today, just remember that immigrant rights are workers' rights, and workers' rights are human rights. Thank you.
That was Izar Cabrera from the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee speaking in Moncton on May 2nd. We'll post his full talk on our YouTube channel. Follow us there at NB Media Co-op to keep up with all of our video journalism. And don't forget that the month of May is our membership month. That's our annual funding drive. You can support us by going to nbmediacoop.org/donate. Reporting for the NB Media Co-op, I'm David Gordon-Koch, local journalism initiative reporter. Thanks for tuning in today.